Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics. This is episode 19, recorded October 29th, 2009.
Happy Halloween!
And because it's Halloween, we thought we'd talk about...
ghost shrimp.
No, not ghost shrimp. That.
Oh, come on.
It sounds appropriate, but...
that's, you could have ghost shrimp haunt your aquarium.
Yeah, I guess you could, but...
Okay, sorry, that was lame.
Okay, we're going to talk about something else, actually, today. We're going to talk about something called...
a beta sorority tank.
Okay, which is kind of neat, actually. We're kind of stoked about it because we've set one up, and it's fun. So that's why we're going to talk about it.
And even though it is a sorority, there is no alcohol involved.
That's true. That would be...
bizarre.
And a problem in a fish tank. Your water quality would go down the toilet, I'm sure. Very quickly. But, here we go. Of course, everybody knows about betas, or however you want to pronounce it.
Or Siamese fighting fish.
As some people still call them. Whatever you want to call them. Most people know about them, and many people have kept them. It is not the scope of this podcast to give an exhaustive manual, if you will, on how to care for bettas. There's plenty of information on that. We're going to talk specifically about the beta sorority tank. Okay?
So what is a beta sorority tank?
It's basically an aquarium in which female bettas are housed together in quantity, in some numbers. Everyone listening to this probably knows you can't do that with males because you'll have a shred fest. They'll rip each other to bits. But with females, it's possible. And in some cases, they may indeed rip each other to bits, which we'll get to in the caveats. But if you're careful, you can manage it.
Okay, so the advantages of a beta sorority tank, obviously, number one is you can keep more than one beta.
Right, and so you can... take advantage of the many color varieties that exist in bettas. Not too many years ago, it was hard to find female bettas in a variety of colors, but that is no longer true. It's pretty easy to find a lot of different types. And, of course, because they're females, there's theoretically at least less aggression between them than there would be with males, and so you get the whole idea of, oh, you're getting all these beautiful bettas together. That's basically why it's cool, why people try it.
And I've enjoyed doing it because it's relaxing on some of the same level as a goldfish tank is relaxing, but it has some interesting interactions, kind of more like a cichlid tank, so it's kind of a nice mix between those two.
Right, that's a good way to put it. It's not an Mbuna tank, and it's not a goldfish tank, but it's somewhere in between in a lot of ways. So, it's fun. Definitely there are some complex behaviors occurring between the fish. Definitely some bright color, and so it works out nicely. Now, why did we specifically decide to set one up? Well, one thing is, I'm not a huge fan of veil-tailed bettas. Now, that's not to, you know, offend anyone out there who loves veil-tailed bettas, and they're great. I've had them before. I've enjoyed them. But all other things being equal, I'd rather have a betta that is not a veil tail rather than one that is. And I've had crown tails, and I've had delta tails, and double tails, you know, half moons, a couple different types, various types of bettas. But one of my favorites are actually just the placat, as they're sometimes called, the short fin bettas. One of my favorites. And I thought, well, females already look like that, and instead of paying, you know, upwards of $50 to get a nice placat beta from Thailand shipped to your house, or paying a fair amount to get one in the pet store, maybe a little less, but still a fair amount, we could just go get female bettas, and then there you go. And so I kept
the same effect.
A couple of female bettas, but not together, for quite a while, a couple of years. And then we thought, well, it would be nice to try this sorority tank once I looked it up, because I knew that people had done it, so I looked it up, did a bit of research on it before I tried it, and once I had done the requisite research, we give it a go. So what we have is a tank of, we started out with 8 fish in a 20-gallon tank, 8 bettas, in a tank that has some Anubias and some hornwort and some Java fern growing in it. You want to make sure there's some landscaping in the tank, just a bare tank. The fish don't have any visual barriers in a tank like that, and so they're more likely to beat on each other because the females still exhibit some aggression. And what happened after a few days?
Well, we had noticed that one of them was definitely trying to be dominant fish in the tank.
Right, it was ruling the roost.
And so Russ decided to take that one into his office at work so it didn't beat everybody up.
And lo and behold,
it was a male!
Yep, built a bubble nest. And it's a fish with a very light white body and red and blue fins. So it wasn't immediately obvious to me that it didn't have an ovipositor, because on that white body it's a little difficult to tell. But after some careful examination, I was able to confirm that it lacks an ovipositor, which is one way to distinguish a male betta from a female betta. And so, yes, it's a male. And I'm glad that I relocated it, because that could be a big problem. It was sold to me as a female, by the way. I wouldn't be stupid enough to put a fish sold as a male with female fish, unless I were trying to beat it and breed them, and in which case I wouldn't have done it in that particular way. So, it is now happy in its own 5-gallon tank at my office, and there are now 7 female bettas in the tank here at home. Now, we should probably talk a little bit about how to distinguish males from females, just to make sure, because you can be sold, as we were, fish that are the incorrect gender from what you were expecting. The ovipositor is a small spot. It's very small. It projects from the fish's vent just right near the pelvic fins, which are the two trailing fins on the ventral surface or the belly of the fish, kind of in between that area where those pelvic fins come out. And it can be hard to spot. It's quite small, but female bettas have them. Males generally do not, although sometimes males have their vent can look a little like that at certain times, but not permanently and not for very long. Males also tend to have more gill structure, external gill structure coming out that you can see. It can be called a beard. That's more visible in males than in females. Probably, my guess is at least, because they flare more. Not that females don't flare, but the males flare more. And it's a lot more common to build a bubble nest for male, although I've heard from some that females occasionally do it, and I've heard from others that they never do. I'm not sure what to believe. I've never seen a female build one. Males do.
There you go. So we're going to talk just a little bit about each of our 7 female bettas that we have, because they're all so pretty. So they all want a spotlight.
Okay, why don't you start out?
Okay, let's talk about Prairie Dawn. We named them all, of course. I'm talking about Prairie Dawn first.
Okay.
She was a little bit different when Russ first brought her home. Obviously, they color up more as you have them a little bit more, but she has almost orange fins. It's kind of a reddish orange, but it's not straight red, and kind of an iridescent bluish purple body, and she kind of reminded us of the Muppet on Sesame Street, so that's why we named her Prairie Dawn.
Because her fins are orange, too.
Yeah. but she's really brightened up, too, since we brought her home, and is really beautiful, and is now one of my favorites.
Yeah, and that's one thing, in case you are just listening to this, you've never had bettas before, they are usually vastly more colorful, including the females. Once you get them home and they're in the nice conditions, they're not in a little cup, which is, you know, they'll live there for a while, but it's not by any means an ideal home. Once they get in a nice aquarium with good water quality, nice heater in there, they begin to color up within a couple of days, if not sooner. And so that's happened to her. So we've got Prairie Dawn. Next one I'm going to talk about is Cassidy, because I can see her right now. Cassidy has a white body with red fins, and some of the fin rays have a little blue on them. That would be considered a fault in a show betta, but we're not worried about that right now. We're just having
we
fun
just
with
think
our
she's
sorority
purdy.
Team. Yeah. So, white body, red fins, basically.
Okay, let's see. Who should we do next? Let's do Lucia and Biancaneve together because they're both kind of similar. Biancaneve, which incidentally means Snow White in Italian, has a white body. She's a little bit more pink than white. She's not really pink. You know, they call them white and they're really just pink. She's not really pink. She's more white than pink, but she does have a little bit of a pinkish tint to it. And Lucia is sort of a goldish white. She's got like more of a yellow cast to her white.
Like a lemon meringue pie
Like
or
lemon
something.
meringue pie. That's exactly right.
Yeah. And so they're both beautiful fish.
And we tell you this about the colors because Russ did some filming of them and we thought we'd put it up on the website for you to see. So then when you go and see them, you can say, "Oh, look, there's Lucia, there's Peridon."
And if it's not up yet by the time you see this or
It
you listen to this,
will be
then
soon.
it will be soon. We'll get to it. Okay, who else? There's Zoe. When I bought her,
Zoe's
I
an
thought she was
interesting one.
green. I'm partially colorblind, so that's sort of an issue, but she looked pretty green to me. But Kelly says she's not green. What color is she?
Well, when you first brought her home, she was almost black to me with some stripes. And now, every time I see her, she looks different.
But she's an interesting
She's
pitch.
very interesting to me. She has like some leopard spots on her dorsal
Which
fin.
isn't uncommon. A lot of bettas do have that, but
I
it's
think
more visible in her than
she's
most of the
still
others.
settling into her color, I
Yeah,
think.
but it's an interesting sort of color. We have a crown tail too.
Named Princess.
Yeah, I think the kids named her something, but
She's blue.
she's a very rich sort of velvety blue, and she's a crown tail, so her fin rays extend past where the actual fin tissue is, and that leaves an interesting sort of pattern. Although it's not like the exaggerated crown tail of a male, it's just kind of a more mild version of it, more like a comb tail male than the really long trailing extensions of a crown tail male that you might get.
And she's one that's kind of at the top of the hierarchy in the tank, princess.
Right. She tends to be there one of the first when she's eating. She tends to chase some of the other fish around more. And then we've got Sorsha. She's our red betta.
Named, of course, after Saoirse from Willow with red hair.
Yeah, so named after a kind of a fantasy character. She's not as red as some of the really red males, but her fins are pretty red and her body's a little bit lighter. And did we cover everybody
Well, let's
in
see,
there?
Bianca, Nebula, Lucia, Cassidy, and Zoe, and Peridon, and Princess, and so yeah, that's seven.
That's
That's
seven.
everybody.
And the other one we were going to call Abigail.
Because she was red, white, and blue.
She was red, white, and blue, white body, red fins with blue fin rays. So it was a pretty striking fish. Still is, but turned out to be a male. Incidentally, a very interesting thing we've noticed is that this fish, the former Abigail, or the fish formerly known as Abigail, whatever you want to call it, has fins that are growing at an amazing rate. All these other fish, you know, their fins have not perceptibly grown since we got them, but this male fish, its fins are growing like crazy. I hope it turns out not to be a late blooming veil tail. I hope its fins stay fairly short and symmetrical because I appreciate that. Once again, not knocking on the veil tails, just personal preference, folks, but
Maybe we had picked Abigail, of course, because of Abigail Adams and his patriotic for the red, white, and blue. But now that it's a male, if you guys have any ideas of what you think would be appropriate for a patriotic male beta of some kind of early American name, feel free to email it to us.
yeah, that could be good because we need to pick one soon. Now, let's talk about a couple of things if you do want to set up a beta sorority tank. Some things you should be aware of and be careful about, especially. Okay, one thing is that you shouldn't start with a tank that is too small. 10 gallons is probably the lower limit, and 20 gallons is better. You know, the bigger the better, basically. And you also want to make sure you have a minimum number of fish. Apparently, two fish will just decide that they're both top dog and beat the fool out of each other until one of them proves it. Three seems to be the bare minimum, but I would say it's probably safer to go with more. We tried eight, and of course that's down to seven now because of that male that we moved out. Seems to be working okay so far.
This is apparently because if there's enough of them around, then it's just not worth the effort to try to boss everybody around, and so they leave each other alone.
Or, well,
It
yes,
sort of.
in essence, they will still boss each other around, but they will not concentrate their effort on
Yeah.
one other fish. They'll be spreading
There's
it
too many
around.
people to really pick on one. What people? Too many fish for them to really just pick on, one, go one on one all the time.
Yes, it's like what might happen if you had two tiger barbs in an aquarium. They'll probably harass every other fish half to death. But if you have 19 tiger barbs, in a 180-gallon tank, they'll just have a pecking order among themselves and leave all the other fish alone. So it's sort of the same thing. I wouldn't say that 7 is the ideal number in this aquarium. If I could do it over again, I probably would put more. I think 7's probably on the low end, but it seems to be working okay. We haven't had any serious aggression. A few minor squabbles, especially at the beginning, with a little bit of slight fin damage, not in any chunks out of fins, just some fin splitting and so on. That seems like that's probably par for the course, and that's going to happen if you set up a beta sorority tank. But I would say in a 10-gallon tank, you probably want to do 4 or 5 at least.
And Russ says if he could do it over again because we can't add more betas now that it's already set up.
Right,
You have
very
to
good point.
put the betas that you're getting, you have to put them all in at once because.
If you don't, the ones that are already in there will see a newcomer and beat the tar out of it, in general. So we had to be very careful about introducing all these bettas, and so we bought a whole bunch at the same time. I think we, of necessity, because of what was available at the store, we had to split it into 2 days. But when we did that, we reintroduced all the fish. We took them all out of the tank, reintroduced the new fish, let the new fish get used to the tank for a little while, and then put the
How
older fish
long were
back
they
in.
in there?
The new fish were probably in there at least an hour or so before the older fish went back in, and that worked all right. That seemed to do the trick, and so they've all been fairly peaceful with one another.
Oh, yeah.
One problem, though, is this is the big disclaimer of the show. Just because it goes fine for a while doesn't mean it's going to be fine tomorrow or in a year from now. Who knows? I've heard that these tanks can be time bombs, and everything can seem totally hunky-dory, it's all fine, and then one day, boom, everything's dead. One fish is left, and everything else is gone. I hope that doesn't happen.
It's a disgruntled postal fish.
Yeah, we really hope that's not going to happen, but you never know. It's a little bit like having an Mbuna tank. I remember having an Mbuna tank that I had for several years that did just fine, and then one day, one fish just got ripped to shreds. Things can be unstable. You have to be willing to accept the risk and do what you can to minimize it. And some of the things that we've mentioned already that you can do to help minimize that, make sure you introduce all the fish at the same time. I know that
Okay.
violates rules of quarantine, but in this case, there's not a whole lot you can do. It's
Make
there.
sure you put the plants in.
Yeah, make sure you have plants and other landscaping. We've got a couple of flower pots and some rocks and so on in there, things like that. The more you have, the better it is. Visual barriers, places that they can mark off territories, it's a great thing. Some people recommend putting dither fish like zebra danios or some other thing in there. We haven't really done that. We've got some bristlenoses in the tank, but they were there first. Make sure you feed them enough. And if you spread out the feedings a couple of times throughout the day, that's more usually better anyway for them dietarily, but also it may help to curb aggression. So give that a go. Check out the resource pages for some pages that I have used to help me research bettas in general over the years, as well as sorority tanks specifically. So if you're looking for something interesting, you're willing to accept an element of risk. You don't want to spend a whole lot on buying really expensive, fancy show bettas that are absolutely beautiful, but like I said, expensive, and you can only keep one male per tank. Then you might want to try a beta sorority tank. We've really enjoyed it.
Yep. Bye.
Thanks. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and/or questions, please email us at info@aquarimax.com.